everybody, and welcome to the Animation Podcast, a weekly podcast about all things animation brought to you by Filmbook. My name is Matt Brunet, but some of you may know me as Animat from my YouTube channel, Electric Dragon 505, home of web series that are all about animation, including Animation Look Back and Animat's Reviews. If this is your first time here in the Animation Podcast, well, the title will explain everything for you. It is a podcast, and I talk about animation. Specifically, the latest news that happened this week. So, for today's episode, we are going to look first into history being made, actually during the last weekend, considering that Finding Dory broke all new records to be the biggest opening for an animated feature ever. Then we will be looking at Peter Son giving tribute to the late Studio Ghibli animator Makiko Futaki. Then afterwards, we will be discussing a little bit about the brand new Ben 10 reboot that Cartoon Network has announced. Then afterwards, we will be looking at a really cool art book that I am really interested in, and I would like to recommend you guys to check out. And then finally, we will end things off with Matt's Pick of the Week. If you want to check out more episodes of the Animation Podcast, then head on down to Filmbook, that is film-book.com, by searching The Animation Podcast. You can also email us at podcast@filmbook.com. with the Animation Podcast in the subject line. So, first things first, we are going to look into history being made. Now, I don't know how long this record will stay, because often this would be forever changing, but we are going to keep this one for a good while. Now, as you guys may know, Finding Dory has recently been hit in theaters, but little did we expect that it would be so big, not only to really wake up the box office and to really kick off the summer blockbusters, but also it managed to make the biggest opening ever for an animated feature in many different accounts. First off, on Thursday night, it beat that record when it made a total of $9.2 million, which the previous holder was for Minions last year, when it opened up Thursday night with $6.2 million. Then afterwards, for one day, it actually made a total of $55 million just on Friday alone. So that is pretty much the biggest, well, the highest grossing single day record, which was previously held by Shrek the Third with $47 million. And then once again, it beat Shrek the Third with the biggest opening weekend ever for an animated feature when Finding Dory made a grand total of $135 million, which previously beats Shrek the Third's $121.6 million. This has also been marked as the second biggest opening ever for a movie to be released in June, right under Jurassic World. And oh my god, like, even I didn't expect that this would be really big, or, well, let alone that I didn't expect it to really be as good as I thought it would be, but apparently, it's still a legitimately really good movie, like, just enough to really get everyone's attention and to go check it out. And, like, even when you go into websites like Metacritic or even Rotten Tomatoes, like, right now, Finding Dory got a 94% on Rotten Tomatoes, which is, like, really high up there, along with other movies that even Disney released, like Zootopia, and also The Jungle Book. So, honestly, it really is crazy how Finding Dory, like, just pretty much got the biggest opening, and let alone the fact, like, the way that it managed to get $135 million in one weekend. Most animated films, even nowadays, they would wish that they made $135 million domestically, or even just $135 million alone. Like, it's just absolutely phenomenal. Like, even, like, this is just a tiny bit less than what Kung Fu Panda 3 did overall. Like, Kung Fu Panda 3 did get a little bit more domestically, like, around, like, at least more than $140 million, but that's still not far off than what Finding Dory did just in one entire weekend, and it's just insane to just think about. Now, if we are going to look a bit into the future of how Finding Dory will be, and I'm going to be very honest, I'll say this right now, Finding Dory is going to be the next animated feature to surpass $1 billion at the box office. And the reason why I say that is because there's no other better comparison on how it will go at the box office than Toy Story 3, because when you do think about it, Toy Story 3 and Finding Dory, like, they're both made for the exact same audience. Now, let's just think about it for a minute. With Toy Story 3, it was actually released more than a decade after its predecessor, Toy Story 2. So, what really got Toy Story 3 is that not only will it be appealing for families and kids and all that stuff, but the core audience will also be included the kid, or like the people, or like the young adults that grew up with Toy Story, you know, that actually watched Toy Story in theaters, like ever since like the first film or even the second film was released. And I'll be honest, I was actually one of those people, you know, like I remember as a child, I saw Toy Story and Toy Story 2 in theaters, and it was fantastic. And I remember like how big and popular it really was, like toys were everywhere. And, like, when we look in Finding Dory, it's a bit of the same thing. Because Finding Dory was released 13 years after the original, the Finding Nemo movie that was released back in 2003. And, again, I remember back when I actually saw that movie in theaters. So, like, it's going to be a lot for those people who used to watch Finding Nemo back when it was in theaters 13 years ago, and actually saw the grand evolution and like how big Finding Nemo eventually became as one of the best animated features, period, and one of the movies that really kickstarted, or like at least gave a massive boost to Pixar's popularity as one of the best animated features ever made, or like made Pixar one of the best animation studios that's currently up and running. And this is something that I just realized, like, this is on top of the fact that, you know, like, this is actually Pixar's first ever animated film that they won Best Animated Feature for it. Now, I know that nowadays a lot of people would poke fun over the fact that, oh, Pixar always wins Best Animated Feature, but, like, when you do think about it, when you think of movies like Ratatouille, The Incredibles, Finding Nemo, and stuff like that, you know for a fact that they do deserve it. I mean, there's no other movie that was better than that. Like, seriously, so, absolutely, Finding Dory was the one that really really made Pixar, how they eventually became today as one of the best, animation studios that's currently running, and, you know, it's just absolutely amazing. But yeah, going into the fact that it's going to be big at the box office, and, like, it could possibly surpass $1 billion, which will be insane to think about, considering that we already got Zootopia making $1 billion at the box office, so it's going to be really cool that we're going to see Finding Dory surpass $1 billion. And, you know, like, it doesn't seem like it's going to have massive competition throughout the summer. Like, when you do think about next month, the only real big contender it's going to get, like, at least directly, is going to be The Secret Life of Pets. I don't really imagine much that Ice Age Collision Course is really going to be, like, really threatening to Finding Dory. It's not going to break apart, like, its box office performance. Other than that, in August, well, I honestly don't really know. Like, the only animated films that are being released, hold on, like, I'm sure there are a few others, if I could think about. Oh, no, actually, no, not even. In August, there really isn't going to be much competition. It's just going to be, like, Pete's Dragon, and that's it. Like, I was thinking of other animated films released in August, and I was just thinking, no, it's actually Sausage Party. Okay, that's not really a competitor, but yeah. We'll just have to wait and see, but there could be other big movies that could be accounted for as well, you know? Right now, they just released Independence Day Resurgence, and then there's going to be other big blockbusters that are going to be released. Like, well, we'll have to wait and see. Like, the one that's really getting a lot of press right now is Ghostbusters, and then after, we're also going to be getting Suicide Squad. So we'll have to wait and see how the performance of Finding Dory will be. Plus the fact that it just released mostly in North America, and it has yet to hit, like, in other places in the world. So we'll have to wait and see how the performance will go there, and, maybe, like, Finding Dory will reach that number, but overall, I would say, like, I'm pretty much saying it right now, if it really made that big of a splash, no pun intended, just on its weekend box office alone, and considering how it is well-praised right now, almost as much as the original, then it should not really have a problem to go and surpass the $1 billion mark. So will it happen? I don't know. We'll just wait and see. But in the meantime, you guys should seriously check out Finding Dory. Now, for our next story, we are going to go into something that's a little bit sad, but a little bit touching at the same time. Like, yeah, it will be a bit sad, but, you know, it will lift your spirits up a little bit. Now, if you guys may remember, in May last month, an animator and a veteran at Studio Ghibli by the name of Makiko Futaki has unfortunately passed away. And considering that we are talking about a veteran at Studio Ghibli, you could definitely bet that this is someone who has worked upon many of the greatest animated features that we know today. Some of these would include Howl's Moving Castle, not only that, Laputa, Castle in the Sky, Kiki's Delivery Service, and many others, including some stuff outside of Studio Ghibli, including Akira. But recently on IndieWire, Pixar veteran and also the new director at Pixar, Peter Son, who recently did The Good Dinosaur, decided he will be a bit of a guest writer on IndieWire, and he decided to write a little tribute to the late animator at Studio Ghibli, Makiko Futaki. So I'm just going to read a little bit. I'm not going to read fully because that would be like stealing a bit. So I'm just going to read you a bit of an excerpt on what Peter Son has wrote. So Makiko Futaki lived a life of animation. She worked on films as Katsuhiro Otomo's Akira and Hayao Miyazaki's Howl's Moving Castle. To be honest, I did not know her work until I have heard of her unfortunate passing in May at the young age of 57. Animation can be an invisible art form because it is so collaborative. It is sometimes hard to discern which animator animated what scene in a particular film. But after watching several films an animator drew moments for, one can begin to see a personal style. In Kiki's Delivery Service, Kiki flies along a string of geese and a gust of wind knocked them out of the air. There's a distinctive clarity in the way the geese are animated. Frame by frame, throughout the shots, you could see the details on each bird being hit by the wind and how the wings react. A similar feather line quality can also be seen in Castle in the Sky. For the quiet moments with Sasuke and Mei watching tadpoles in Miyazaki's My Neighbor Totoro, to the way that the plants grow and die when the Shishigami enters the forest in Princess Mononoke, you can begin to see why Makiko Futaki was so trusted to breathe her life into these memorable films. Sorry, I was going with memorial for some reason, but yeah. It definitely is true what Peter Son is saying here, that like once you start watching a lot of animated films, especially from the same studio, you'll definitely recognize a lot of the animators' personal works and a bit of their personal signatures. Like, you can easily tell what is a character animated by Eric Goldberg, or you could definitely tell an animator like a character animated by Glenn Keane. Like, they both have these very distinctive styles, but both masters of their own craft, and they really do make some beautiful art pieces with it. Like, it really does stand out. Plus the fact that it does blend with the rest of the movie very well. Like, this is a part of the same world with the same characters. But then when you have what you got over here with the works of Makiko Futaki, like, you could definitely tell this is someone who loves nature and is able to recreate nature to life, especially like with the geese in Kiki's Delivery Service or with the tadpoles in My Neighbor Totoro. This seems like an animator who is able to bring life to what's already in life, whether it be animals or plants. And I guess, like, out of all of them, the one that really did stand out for me in the list that Peter Son wrote down would probably be when the plants grow and die, like when the Shishigami appears. Like, that is definitely when you could tell the spirit's, like, massive powers just by entering in, and you'll see, like, there's massive life and then there's death once the spirit leaves. It is actually pretty crazy, and it really adds to that mystical, you know, power that the spirit has. But, you know, like looking into how the animator just did all this work, and, you know, it really does bring you this new appreciation, not just with this animator, but with Studio Ghibli as well, that Futaki is another example of how Studio Ghibli looks into the close details, like they look into the smallest details in order to go and work on their animated films and to really perfect their craft. And you know, this is the real admiration here, where this particular animator focuses on the natural aspects. And you know, this is kind of like Futaki's job, in a way, it's kind of like bridging the gap from reality to the fantasy world that Studio Ghibli offers, at the very least in terms of the visual aspects. Because, you know, these, like, the geese are beautifully done, even, like, the little doves done, actually, in Castle in the Sky. They look fantastic. And, you know, like, at the end of the day, I highly recommend that you go and you actually read a bit of this article here on IndieWire, where it's called Studio Ghibli Animator Makiko Futaki, A Tribute, done by Peter Son, and the article written by Bill Dezowitz. This is actually a really beautiful piece, and, you know, it gives you, you know, honestly, like, this is the kind that it makes you want to reflect back on the Studio Ghibli films and what they have done, and it absolutely is beautiful, and I could not recommend it more. So definitely, like, once this podcast is done, definitely go and check out the article on IndieWire. It is just beautiful. Okay, so for our next story, even though we just passed a sweet moment, now let's go into a bit of a crappy moment, which is really getting a lot of negative press, or at least a lot of negative reactions in terms of its audience. Like, I actually remember I just stumbled upon this on Twitter, and suddenly the Cartoon Network, like the official Facebook page, they first revealed a picture of it, and my God, do people hate it. Oh my God, they were slamming not just this, but also to Cartoon Network as well. And what I am referring to is actually Ben 10. Now, recently there was the licensing expo in Las Vegas, and Cartoon Network decided to reveal a lot of their stuff in terms of, like, licensing and who's going to make the toys, who's going to make the brand deals, and all that kind of stuff with all their new shows. Well, at the same time, they would also announce some new things as well. Like, of course, they announced a lot of stuff regarding Rick and Morty or Steven Universe, Adventure Time, or even the reboots that they've previously done, like Powerpuff Girls or Teen Titans Go. However, they have now announced that they're going to make a brand new reboot to another show. This is going to be their third one after Teen Titans Go and the Powerpuff Girls. They're making a reboot of Ben 10, which I'm taking this little snippet here from Animation Magazine, which it says, a fresh take on the beloved Ben 10 animated series will be reintroduced with the international premieres this fall in Europe, the Middle East and Africa, and the Asia-Pacific regions, and will continue into 2017 with the US and Latin America. The series will feature many new and favorite aliens and center around a healthy serving of and will center around a healthy serving of action, excitement, and all-around fun. Playmates Toys is the global master toy partner for Ben 10 and will introduce figures, playsets, roleplay items, and more in fall 2017. And as well as the new Ben 10 animated series is going to be introduced in fall 2017 as well. Now, let me just say this first. I personally do not know about Ben 10. I have not seen any of the episodes from the show. I haven't seen anything from whatever series that they have. Honestly, like, that show was actually premiered after I came, like, after I kind of grew out of Cartoon Network, in the way where I feel like their shows aren't as good as they used to be. It isn't like their golden age back in the 90s and early 2000s with stuff like Dexter's Lab and Johnny Bravo and Ed, Edd n Eddy and Cow and Chicken and all that kind of stuff. Like, you know, I had to move on. That's when, like, I decided to move on, and then they decided to release Ben 10 and all that stuff. But I will say this about Ben 10. It does look cool. Like, if I were, you know, 10 or 12 years old, that would look like a show that I would definitely dig into. It looks really awesome. And, you know, it does seem like something that I would definitely go and collect all the action figures for. Like, that's the thing with me as a kid. Like, I used to like to collect action figures on shows that I used to like. So, you know, it does seem pretty cool, and it does seem like the 2000s version of something like Transformers or He-Man or stuff like that, you know? It looks like a show that can also profit from really cool-looking toys. But, with all that said, even though I don't know Ben 10, at least I do know that when I see the first ever image of the reboot of Ben 10, holy crap, it looks terrible! Ben 10, like, the animation on Ben 10, it actually looks really awesome. What I feel like what they're doing with the reboot is exactly like what they're doing with Teen Titans, where they have to really take a massive step down from this cool anime-style-looking, action-packed series that looks like it's able to take itself seriously while not afraid to bring out a few laughs here and there, a little bit like how they did with, how Nickelodeon did with Avatar and Korra. But this looks terrible. Like, this one, it looks terrible. Like, now they want to go and focus, like, oh, let's just make a goofy little cartoon with the Teen Titans characters, and, you know, like, it'll still have, like, the action-packed fun, but, you know, it's also, like, a really dumb, goofy comedy, you know, like, they'll try to do something like the Powerpuff Girls. However, with the Powerpuff Girls, or at least the original series by Craig McCracken, it does know very well how to mix the comedy and the action. It does know that balance. Teen Titans Go, it does not. And because of this, a lot of people are hating on it because, in a way, it kind of, I'll take this as quotes, ruined the reputation of Teen Titans. And now it's just turned into this dumb, stupid looking cartoon. And it looks like that's exactly what they're doing with Ben 10. And, you know, it kind of makes me want to question what Cartoon Network is doing with their, you know, with their business plan. It looks like they really want to go and just reboot all their shows. Like, all they want to do is just, they want to take their old shows and bring it back to life. Now, granted, there are a few moments that can be a good idea. Like, it's a great idea to bring back Jenny Tartakovsky and make him do, like, pretty much finish off Samurai Jack altogether to make that reboot finale series. But then you would get Teen Titans Go and the Powerpuff Girls, where they're really trying to modernize it, really try to push the the cartoony and like the in jokes and all that, and like the modern references and all that kind of stuff, and it just looks terrible. And it looks like that's exactly what they're doing with Ben 10, and like, it makes me wonder, like, how much money are they making from these reboot series? Like, how much are they profiting from Teen Titans Go and the Powerpuff Girls to the point that now they want to go and make more of these reboots? Like, how much more reboots do you want to go and make after Ben 10? What else do you want to do? A reboot? Like, make a more cartoonier version of Kids Next Door? Or do you want to do, like, another, like, really goofier version than of Cow and Chicken, of Courage the Cowardly Dog? Like, how much more reboots are we going to make? Because I feel like now we're going to be sensing a bit of a pattern, and I feel like next year we might get another Cartoon Network reboot on our hands, and I don't know. I feel like at this point now, Cartoon Network is really losing a lot of its popularity. Like, if it weren't for Adventure Time and Steven Universe, people would not care at the least about Cartoon Network. Like, it's just another dumb channel, and they're living in their dark ages. But, like, thank God, at least for those two shows, they got something. They got substance. They got, you know, they got shows that people would want to come in and watch, and they're actually very well crafted. But this, on the other hand, it just feels like another cash grabber. Like, they felt like they've made a lot of money with Ben 10, and now they want to make more money with Ben 10 by reviving it back in this really dumber version. I have no idea. It's just, I don't know. Like, that's definitely going to be a show that I want to avoid for Cartoon Network. I don't know. That's definitely not something I'm sold into. So with that said, if you are curious regarding the Ben 10 reboot, then all you have to do, well, at least if you're in North America, you gotta wait, or Latin America even, you gotta wait until the fall 2017, while everyone else, like the Europe, Middle East, Africa, and the Asia Pacific region, you guys will be getting it earlier during this fall. Okay, so the next one that we have right over here is actually very fascinating. This is just a short little thing that was just written on Anime News Network, but this is something that I would like to talk to any listeners who are also artists, or they want to be animators, or they just love to draw and, you know, be creative with this art. But this is something that I highly recommend that you should go check out. And what I'm referring to is actually a new art of books, but this time it's with Yu-Gi-Oh cards. Now, taking it from an article here at Anime News Network, it says, North American publisher Udon Entertainment announced on Tuesday that it will publish art books featuring the images used in the Yu-Gi-Oh trading card game. The book compiles art from over 7,000 Yu-Gi-Oh cards over the game's history. Udon is scheduling the book for the fourth quarter of 2016. Udon released the Yu-Gi-Oh! Dual Art book last September. The book compiles art from the Yu-Gi-Oh! Manga artist Kazuki Takahashi and includes manga illustrations and Takahashi's personal illustrations. So, Yu-Gi-Oh! Dual Art was pretty much the art of Yu-Gi-Oh! Manga, but now we are getting the art of Yu-Gi-Oh! Cards. And honestly, and I speak for someone who used to play the Yu-Gi-Oh! Cards. Like, I want to get back to it eventually, but it's just that the format right now, and considering all the cards that are released, I don't know, the game kind of sucks at this point. Like, you always got to play with the OP decks that cost, like, thousands of dollars. But other than that, I would have to say this art of book is actually amazing, and I'm honestly surprised they haven't done this before. This is actually really fascinating because, like, if you have at least seen some of the Yu-Gi-Oh cards that have been out, like, you should definitely check out the artwork. It's probably one of the most underappreciative aspects about the Yu-Gi-Oh card is the artwork in there is just so phenomenal. And, you know, thinking, like, four times a year or three times a year, or maybe even more, I don't know, like, several times a year, like, Yu-Gi-Oh! Has to release brand new packs that would feature brand new, interesting artworks, which you could definitely tell that they're pretty much based on several aspects. Like, of course, there is the Toon decks, and you also got some of the classic cards, like Blue Eyes White Dragon and Dark Magician, but then you would also get other stuff that were inspired by other factors. Some of the recent decks, like, I'm trying to think. What are those new ones? Is it Black Abyss? Or something like that, I think. There's these new Black Abyss cards. Let me just double check. They're actually based on... I'm close to it. Burning Abyss, there we go, thank you very much. There's a set called the Burning Abyss cards, which are actually based on the tale of Dante's Inferno, and then you also have a recently popular one, which is actually called Cosmos, which are actually based on the Star Wars films. And honestly, it really is fascinating, and they really are really interesting cards to check out. And I mean, like, I'm sure this happens to any artist where, like, I'm sure every artist does this, where they would want to retrace or, like, kind of copy what they see in the cards and just put it there and, you know, like, make their own interpretation. I know that on DeviantArt there are a lot of them based on Dark Magician Girl. Don't deny that. That and also Kuribo. Like, that's another one that's often get... that a lot of people really enjoy drawing, but I do understand with Kuribo, with his simplicity, and, well, with the Dark Magician Girl, that's a completely other another story right there. But I will say, this is definitely awesome, and this is a book that, honestly, I would love to get my hands on this art of book, or any artist should definitely get this. I don't know, Like, with the fact that they're going to have, like, over 7,000 of them, I don't know how they're going to fit all that in a book. Or it's either, like, the book is going to be really big, but hopefully they will make the images, they will make the illustrations much bigger than what we see in the cards, because, like, they're kind of, like, 3 inches by 3 inches or something, or, like, even 2 inch by 2 inch. I don't know. They're, like, small squares of art. But, it's definitely something that I am actually really looking forward to. And honestly, I'm pretty excited right now. It's very rare that it happens, but I am really excited for this art book. So we'll have to wait and see when the art book will be released, when it'll be out finally in the, well, like it says, in the fourth quarter of 2016. So either October, November, December, we'll just have to wait and see. And last but not least, we have Matt's Pick of the Week. And this is probably the biggest story that happened this week, if you don't technically count Finding Dory, considering that, like, it was last week, and, you know, sometimes, like, with the complications, like, oh, technically that's last week's news. But this actually happened the day after Finding Dory, well, like, Finding Dory's records and all that stuff, and oh boy, this is gonna be interesting, and, like, I've already heard from people that they want to know my thoughts on this, so here goes nothing. Ladies and gentlemen, the moment that you have been waiting for, it's time once again that we go back into the Donald Trump of animation. Ladies and gentlemen, we are going back to Sony Pictures Animation, and basically what has happened this week is that before the Licensing Expo came out, Sony Pictures Animation decided to release their entire game plan for both 2017 and 2018, and it looks like they want to go and completely rebuild themselves and try to be a lot more prominent than what they've previously have been before, because considering in the last few years, all they have done is just, you know, retreading through their old franchises, just pretty much trying to make old dumb cash grabs that no one cares anymore. Like, all they've done recently is just, like, open season straight to DVD movies, Smurfs 2, Cloudy 2, Hotel Transylvania 2, which Hotel Transylvania 2 is the only one that kind of made a sound in the in the film industry at its time, but that, like, it didn't fully succeed to avail. It's just, like, a short thing that just happened. But now, it seems that Sony really wants to put up their entire game plan and revealed brand new information and all their information of what they got for 2017 and 2018, and I got the full list for you. And what's going to be happening right now is that I'm going to start things off by listing what they have announced and what they're going to do with these movies and TV shows and all that stuff. Then I'm going to give my thoughts individually, and then finally, we are going to take all this and group it as a whole to see what is going to be happening with Sony Pictures Animation and what is going to be their fate. Now, first things first I want to mention is that Sony has actually glanced over the one thing that they have released on direct-to-DVD during 2017 and 2018 is going to be Surf's Up 2 Wave Mania, which in a previous animation podcast, I have discussed completely in full about my thoughts on it, about not only just making a Surf's Up 2, but making a Surf's Up 2 with WWE wrestlers. Oh my god, what a stupid idea. But then again, like, Sony Pictures Animation is full of surprises. But anyways, with all that said, let's get things going, starting with the 2017 movies, and the first one that they got lined up is going to be Smurfs The Lost Village. As you guys may know, is going to be fully animated, fully computer animated, unlike last time. No live action bits are going to be in there. It's going to stay a lot more faithful to the books. In fact, as you can tell by the designs, they are sticking closely to what Peyo did. And this one is going to be directed by Kelly Asbury, who previously worked on Shrek 2 and Romeo and Juliet. So they are hoping to go and release that by April 7th, 2017. And then afterwards, they got the Emoji Movie, and they revealed a little bit more about what's going to be going on with that. And they said they are, well, they revealed a little bit of the plot, which we already know about. They, like, pretty much what's already been said in CinemaCon. And now it has a brand new title called Emoji Movie Express Yourself. Plus, you even have kind of like the first ever title of it, and you get the first look of the main character, which is like this happy emoji with a bit of a gaping teeth and with random sprouting arms and legs. Oh boy, let me get that. I'll get that to you soon, I promise. And then afterwards, we're getting a little bit more information regarding the movie that used to be called The Lamb, which we know it as Sony Pictures Animation's nativity movie, which is now called The Star. And it is described, and by the way, I'm using a source here from The Hollywood Reporter, that it is a faith-based story about a small brave donkey and his animal friends who become the unsung heroes of the greatest story ever told, The First Christmas. Now, what is actually very interesting, and even kind of sparked my interest, like, oh really, is that they're actually going to do something a little bit similar to what they have done with Arthur Christmas. If you guys remember with Arthur Christmas, it is a collaboration between Sony Pictures Animation and Aardman Animations in order to create this one Christmas movie, which even I'll have to admit, it is a really, really good Christmas film. I definitely recommend it, and hopefully, I'm kind of on the side a little bit like the nostalgia critic Doug Walker, where, like, hopefully Arthur Christmas could be, like, one of those contemporary classics in terms of Christmas movies. But what I'm trying to say is that with The Star, this is going to be a collaboration between Sony Pictures Animation and the Jim Henson Company, since we actually got both Lisa Henson and Brian Henson being the executive producers. So, you know, I actually have, well, no pun intended, I actually have full-on faith to see what they're going to do with this. Then afterwards, in terms of TV shows, now this is going to be the brand new thing that Sony Pictures Animation is doing. They are going to tread the waters into TV, and hopefully they can make a pretty decent market there, just like what DreamWorks Animation did, even nowadays with what they're doing with Netflix. Now, previously, they have mentioned about these things before. We already know that there's going to be a series based on Cloudy with a Chance of Meatballs and Hotel Transylvania, but now it seems that they've revealed a little bit more info about it, which they are both going to be released in 2017, but there is a bit of an interesting part there. Now, like, this is pretty much expected. We all know that this would be coming, that Cloudy with a Chance of Meatballs, the series, will be released on Cartoon Network, but the surprising twist, however, Hotel Transylvania, the television series, which it apparently is called, it's actually going to be released exclusively on the Disney Channel. Like, all around the world, it will be on the Disney Channel, which is rather unusual considering that Disney seems like the company that they would only just release, you know, just their stuff, like, just Disney stuff. The fact that they are bringing in Hotel Transylvania is actually pretty surprising, and it's pretty tough to wrap around my head, and I did gather some of my thoughts on it, and I'll get to more on that later. But then afterwards, a big thing that they have revealed is apparently they are now working on a series based on Ghostbusters. Now, they are going to make what is called Ghostbusters Ectoforce, and apparently it's going to tie in with what they say is going to be the Ghostbusters cinematic universe, and it's going to be set in the future in 2050. And so far, they actually got the creator of Ghostbusters, Ivan Fudge Nabbit. It doesn't say over here. I thought it would mention something. Yeah, sorry. By the way, if I'm not as prepared in here, but or maybe does it say? Maybe it doesn't. Yes, it does. No, it doesn't. Okay, never mind. Anyways, I gotta go and research on this. Ivan Ghostbusters and Ivan Reitman. Yes, they have also announced that Ivan Reitman will be in charge of this Ghostbusters series. In terms of its release date, they are hoping at the very least that they'll release this Ghostbuster series by 2018, and then afterwards we would have to make a massive jump to September 2018, where they are going to release the third Hotel Transylvania film, and much to everyone's surprise, apparently Jendy Tartakovsky is going to come back to direct the film, which is a move that nobody was expecting. He has previously stated before that he never wanted to work on another Hotel Transylvania movie again, considering the bad time that he had at Sony. But he has actually stated, "I thought I was done exploring the world of Hotel Transylvania after the first two films. But while I was away for the franchise finishing my TV show Samurai Jack, an idea sparked," an idea sparked that I got really excited about and made it irresistible to return and helm myself this third adventure. And trust me, let me get to that later, because my god, I have so many things to say about this entire bullcrap. And last but certainly not least, they have finally announced the animated Spider-Man film, which has yet to have a title, but all we know so far is that it has been written by Phil Lord and Chris Miller, which they're only going to be credited as writers. I don't think it has been said that they will also be producers. Oh, no. Not even. They're not even going to be producers. They're just there as the writers. But they have brought in a brand new director. This is going to be his first time directing. And this is Bob Percichetti. Excuse me for that. Yes, they brought in Bob Percichetti to be the director. And previously, beforehand, he has been known as the head of story for films like DreamWorks' Puss in Boots and The Little Prince. And overall, they're hoping that this is going to bring, you know, trying to rebuild Sony Pictures Animation and try to get it back to, like, try to get back to be on top with its competitors, with, like, Blue Sky and Illumination and DreamWorks and Disney and all that stuff. In fact, if we can take a quote here from Christine Belson, the president of Sony Pictures Animation, "We are meaningfully stepping up our level of production while creating an environment that fosters the best talents," Belson said Monday in a statement. "Our goal is to enlarge our presence in the animation landscape with a unique, diverse slate, and our strategy to get there is to let artists drive the movies creatively." Okay, so with all that said, this is pretty much all the info that you got regarding Sony's lineup for 2017 and 2018. That's pretty much their entire game strategy. But now, let us look individually on these movies and on these projects to see which ones will work and which ones won't, and let's have the overall thoughts into it. So, first things first, let's look into Smurfs The Lost Village. Honestly, I can imagine that this could actually be a hit movie. I do have faith a bit on Kelly Asbury. He has done some entertaining movies before, and I can trust him that he can go and make a good Smurf movie out of it. At the very least, what I am expecting from this is that it's going to be a bit better than what we got with the first two Smurf movies. Like, it's going to be better than the first Smurfs and Smurfs 2, no matter what. No matter what people say, at least it will be better than those. How good it will be, maybe it could be something as fantastic as Shrek 2, or maybe it's just going to be something that's, you know, it's kind of decent, it's a bit enjoyable, like, it has a lot of flaws, but I guess it's fine as it is, you know, somewhere in the same lines as Romeo and Juliet. But regarding how it will do financially, to be very honest, I am seriously doubtful on this one. Like, maybe it can do well, like, if it can manage to pull off at least, like, 300 or 400 million, like, it'll probably do fine on that level. But the one big obstacle that I am worried about, and that will completely overshadow this movie, is that the week after Smurfs Lost Village, they are going to, apparently, there's going to be Fast 8, the 8th movie from the Fast and Furious lineup. And as you may know with the Fast and Furious movies, they're pretty much going out there and, you know, they're just really, they're making so much money right now. The last movie, Fast and Furious 7, like, that already surpassed $1 billion. It was it was one of the mega hits that happened last year. So it wouldn't be surprising, especially how Fast 8 got an all-star cast, that they're really going to hype it up, and people would rather want to save their money and go see Fast 8 other than Smurfs Lost Village. I don't know. Maybe Smurfs will do fine under its shadow, but we'll have to wait and see on that, especially when we're talking about a big movie franchise. And then we got the Emoji Movie. And I swear to God, I've said this before, and I'll say it again, but I feel like the more info that they release about the Emoji Movie, the worse it's going to be. Like, it's going down the path of possibly the worst animated film, like one of the worst animated films out there, right next to Food Fight and Food Fight, Norm of the North, and all that kind of stuff. And this is something that it's getting absolutely no praise whatsoever, and for a very good reason. It looks like a terrible idea. The concept is a horrible idea, and especially they released the new the new banner for it with the new character. Oh God, the character looks terrible. My God, this new emoji guy, he looks horrifying. But then again, we're talking about Sony Pictures Animation. It's kind of their thing to make terrible looking animation with horrible looking characters. But with the Emoji Movie, with this guy, we're entering into Cloudy with a Chance of Meatballs levels of awfulness. And this guy he looks terrible. And I do have a feeling that the Emoji Movie is going to be another one of those films Norm of the North that I have to watch it without my glasses. The animation is so bad, it looks so poorly made that it's unwatchable. It's basically unwatchable. And to be very honest, this is the kind of film that we all know it's bad. You have to be so stupid, so so mentally unstable, so insane to even think that this is a good idea. There is no way anybody would be so dumb to believe that Sony will make a good movie out of this. Oh, hell no. You know this is going to be a soulless, cash-grabbing thing that's going to be so dated. It's meant to just be a commercial for all the apps that are there that, and I've seen many people say this before, that it's going to be absolutely outdated once it gets released on DVD and Blu-ray. There's just no way that this can work. And considering the reputation that it has right now, I cannot see this anything higher than a box office bomb. Literally what people do in this situation, they don't go watch it. They just immediately point and hate it. So a good point of reference of how it will do at the box office would be something like a Weinstein movie or even Norm of the North. There's no way that Sony is going to make its money back from this. It would be lucky if the Emoji Movie even surpasses $100 million, let alone if Sony can find money from this. There's just absolutely no way possible that these guys can make a good movie out of this. It's going to be absolutely horrible. And if anything, it's just going to ruin the Sony Pictures Animation name even more than what they've already done right now. It's not like their reputation is already high. They're already regarded as one of the worst animation studios currently running. It's just that, my God, this one is really going to kill its name, and it really is going to make Sony Pictures a full-on embarrassment. But then, after that, you also got The Star, which I've already explained that I am pretty intrigued how apparently the Jim Henson Company is also going to come in and work on The Star with Sony. And like I previously stated, this actually can turn out pretty good, considering that, what they've done with Arthur Christmas, it's great. They can work together in order to release a really good Christmas movie. So maybe it could be a worthwhile watching. However, with that said, like the Emoji Movie, this could actually end up as a box office bomb as well. This is another really tough one that I cannot really imagine that they're really going to make their money out of it. And the reason why I say that is because of two massive factors. Number one, we are dealing with not just a Christmas movie, this is a Christian movie, since it specifically talks about the story of how Jesus Christ was born. And because of that, it's only really going to appeal to a very niche audience. It's mostly going to be the Christian audience. And considering that it is released in December, like it is the beginning of December, it only has this very little window of opportunity to really find some profit out of it. And even when January will be released, like it's going to be pretty much disappeared off of the face of the earth. So Sony better not, like Jim Henson Company and Sony better not put in so much money on this, because it's going to really be appealing to just a really limited audience. And even when you look at many of the Christian movies nowadays, like a lot of them are said to be hits. But when you look at the numbers, that's mostly because Christian movies are so cheap to make. They're only like a couple, like they're only made like around $5 million. And then like even the highest grossing ones would reach up to like $40 to $60 million. But for animation, that's in the category of box office bomb entirely. So they have to make a lot more than that. And reason number two, why The Star is going to be a bomb, is very similar to why Smurfs might not get as much money as you would probably expect. The week after The Star, there's going to be another big movie, which is going to be the eighth of the franchise, will be released. And that movie is Star Wars Episode 8. And you know for a fact, it's going to overshadow The Star. Like, nobody's going to go and see a little Christian, like this little Christian movie, when they can go and check out the newest Star Wars. Like, that, you know for a fact, is going to bring in the money, especially with the gigantic success that Disney has with The Force Awakens. It's going to be really hard to find that The Star will find a way to make some profit. It's easily going to be overshadowed. And honestly, it's like it could be debatable which one is going to be a bigger bomb at the box office, the Emoji Movie or The Star. That we'll have to wait and see. I'll give it that. It could be a really, you know, The Star could be a really good movie in terms of what it is by itself, but financially, I'm sorry to say, but I don't think it's going to be that successful, or if it's going to be even a hit or even profitable. They're most likely going to lose money out of this. Now, the next step that we are going into is going to be the TV shows that they're going to release, with Cloudy with a Chance of Meatballs on Cartoon Network, and also Hotel Transylvania on the Disney Channel. And for both, I will say good luck. Like, let me just say, it's going to be a miracle if both these shows would ever surpass season 2. Or, like, I wish them luck if they even surpass season 1. Because, honestly, it doesn't look like it's going to really bring in a large amount of audiences. Or if it's really going to bring in some appeal, like, if it's going to be, like, a really, like, you know, if it's going to have some quality in the show. I mean, like, there's no way to imagine that the Cloudy with a Chance of Meatballs series will be as much of a hit as something, like, as one of the big TV shows right now, like Adventure Time or My Little Pony Friendship is Magic. There is absolutely no way whatsoever. Like, yeah, good luck trying to find anyone at DHX that's really going to put in, like, so much effort and so much heart as they would as My Little Pony. There is no way. Like, I say, like, it's gonna be canceled after season 1 or season 2. And as for the Hotel Transylvania series, I already stated before that it is rather unusual, and I was shocked when I heard that the Disney Channel is going to be released. Now, I understand there are a lot of benefits to be released on the Disney Channel, but at the same time, you know it's going to be this massive risk. Sony is taking a giant risk for Hotel Transylvania to enter into Disney. And the reason for that is because, like, considering that this is not a Disney property, Disney better expect some real big numbers. This better be a giant hit, or else it's out of there. They're no longer touching it. Plus the fact that Disney is doing a bit of the same thing. Like, on the Disney Channel also, they're going to release the animated series of Tangled Before Ever After. And they're going to release the Big Hero 6 series on Disney XD. If Hotel Transylvania does not reach up to the numbers that these two shows would get, which is more likely that they're going to be a hit, considering they're Disney movies based on, like, well, they're like Disney animated series that are based on Disney movies, then it's not going to last long. Like, I don't think it's going to be that big. Like, sure, this is a spin, like a prequel show that stars Mavis and her friends, but yeah, I don't know. It's going to be a massive risk. I will give it credit, though, that I could see the Hotel Transylvania series be much more successful than the Cloudy series, but yeah, again, like I said with Cloudy, good luck trying to get a season 2 out of it. I don't know. All right, so with that said and done, let's go into 2018, and let's take a look into Ghostbusters Ectoforce. Now, I'm going to say this right now. Make your Cloudy series and make your Hotel Transylvania series. Go ahead and do it. I don't give two craps, whatever. It's fine. But this is the one I disagree with the most. You cannot announce something like this immediately. I feel like, again, you're really jumping the gun with the Ghostbusters franchise, really. Like, Sony somehow has this massive mindset that they think it's going to be a huge hit. It's going to be like the biggest summer blockbuster ever, considering that everybody on the internet is talking about it. And honestly, like, they don't really factor in what if it flops? Because already they're really losing a lot of their audiences, considering that they released the Fallout Boy version of the theme of the Ghostbusters, and that is getting massive negative reactions. Like, I mean, I'm even seeing people who used to support Ghostbusters, now they're listening to it and they're kind of turned off by it. And honestly, like, I feel like it's way too early to really try to cash in on more Ghostbusters stuff. Because honestly, what if the reboot of Ghostbusters is a flop? What if it's a box office bomb and you made little money out of it? What if it didn't make as much money as you'd expect? What's going to happen then? Are you going to cancel out all the other stuff that you have planned? Plus the fact that Sony Pictures Animation wants to do this animated movie of Ghostbusters directed by the guy who did the Clash of Clans commercials. And that is real, by the way. Look it up. But honestly, with Ectoforce, like, maybe it could turn out to be a fantastic series. Maybe it could even turn out even better than the real Ghostbusters. But honestly, it's way too early to go and bank in on something like Ghostbusters. So honestly, yeah, don't do that. This is just something that's just a massive no, and just lay it to rest. Don't do it right now. And the next thing that I do want to discuss is going to be regarding Hotel Transylvania 3, which they have already announced before, but now they have revealed that Jendy Tartakovsky is coming back to Hotel Transylvania. He will be the director once again. And like I stated before, he has previously released his statement why he decided to come back, because somehow he got this idea while finishing up Samurai Jack and decided to go back. But I need to make this statement right now. Jendy Tartakovsky, you are so full of crap. You have lied to the people of the press and you know it. There is no way that you suddenly have this idea for Hotel Transylvania and you need to rush back into Sony Pictures Animation. Not after all the crap that you laid out on Sony Pictures Animation. The fact that they rejected a lot of your projects. They said no to movies like Popeye. They said no to movies like Can You Imagine? And instead, the only option you can have left now is just Hotel Transylvania 3. Now, if you want to know the actual story of what happened, here's the story of why Jendy Tartakovsky came back to Hotel Transylvania 3. He realized that after working on after Samurai Jack, he'll have nothing else to work on. He'll be absolutely jobless. He'll be jobless, and he'll just be a struggling animator. Like, he'll just be a struggling artist desperately finding work. So he decided the only option he has now is to go back to Hotel Transylvania, because that's the only way he can find money. He went in there for the exact same reason why Sony wanted to make Hotel Transylvania 3. It's solely because of the money. If he was a man to his word, like, he would have ventured off to other projects, or at the very least, go back to Sony Pictures Animation and do an original movie. Do something that is not Hotel Transylvania, because now he has entered into the level of sellout. Now, I'm sorry to say this, guys, but with this move, Jenny Tartakovsky is a freaking sellout. And I know that I'm going to get a lot of crap from the Jenny Tartakovsky extremist, where, like, they would just give nothing but praise to Jenny Tartakovsky. They see him as an animation legend. He does absolutely nothing wrong. Everything he touches turns into gold. And, like, they really are sad people, because they're the kind of people that still believe that Jenny Tartakovsky will suddenly return to the Popeye movie in the very similar way that a little kid is waiting for his dead parents to suddenly come back to him. It really is sad at this point. And, like, you want to tell them that it's never going to happen, that you have to let go of the Popeye movie, but they're just going to be mad and crying at you, just going, "No, he will come back. The animation test was amazing. You'll see. Sony Pictures Animation will bring him back." Yeah, no, bullcrap. It's never gonna happen, guys. Like, right now, he's just stuck doing Hotel Transylvania. And how sad is that? That when you think, throughout the entire decade, all Jenny Tartakovsky did is just the freaking Hotel Transylvania films. Like, in terms of television and movies, that's all he did. It's nothing but Hotel Transylvania, Hotel Transylvania, Hotel Transylvania, and just that one small moment that he did Samurai Jack. The only good thing, and come on, like, even Jenny Tartakovsky fans are being a little bit tired of this. It's like, come on, man, can't you do something better? Can't you do something original? Like, even I'll admit that for Jenny Tartakovsky, he could do much better than this. Like, especially, like, if he had a horrible time working at Sony, the fact that, like, he always had these production troubles. And you know, here's another delusional thing, is that a lot of people are saying that, well, Adam Sandler should better stand back from the creative process and let Jenny Tartakovsky do what he wants. Yeah, guys, you know for a fact it's never going to happen. That is absolute bullcrap. If you don't want Adam Sandler to not be a part of the creative force, then don't make an Adam Sandler movie. Simple as that. They didn't do that for the last two films. What makes you think it's going to change now? Adam Sandler will be involved as both the voice of Dracula and in the creative process, rather you like it or not. Okay, so with that said, the final thing that they have, and honestly, this is the most promising both as a movie and in terms of how it would do financially, is going to be Spider-Man. Now, the thing is with Spider-Man, this is probably the most anticipated film that Sony Pictures Animation has in their lineup. And honestly, seeing that they did get Bob Persichetti, this is actually going to be very interesting. I am a fan of Puss in Boots. I thought it was a really good movie. And, you know, it's going to be pretty fascinating, and maybe, just maybe, like, they could take a break from the dumb cartoony animation that they always do for a while. Maybe we'll take a break, a bit of that, from Smurfs the Lost Village, if they don't exaggerate on the cartooniness. And we'll probably take a break from The Star as well, but with what we're seeing, with what we're getting with the Emoji movie, and we're getting another Hotel Transylvania film, it's gonna be finally nice that they could stop this old, like, this one-trick pony thing that they're not even good at in the first place. So, at the very least, they could take a break from that, and we can happily go back into some, like, you know, some actual good computer animation, some more realistic looking. And it's, I know for a fact that they're not gonna do the dumb cartoony animation with Spider-Man. Like, they will have, like, it will be a bit more serious in terms of its tone, so that could have a lot more potential. And plus the fact that it is going to be released on Christmas 2018, on December 21st, at the very least, we know for a fact it's not going to intervene with any other movie. Like, this is going to be the big movie of December 2018, and in terms of Star Wars, they're not going to release it in December unless they decided to take the Han Solo movie and suddenly put that in December. We'll just have to wait and see, but chances are they're going to keep the Han Solo movie in probably May or somewhere in the beginning of summer, and they're going to leave Spider-Man there. So out of all the movies, Spider-Man is probably the one that has the most promise, both as a movie and for Sony Pictures Animation. Now, if we look into all this combination with all the things that Sony Pictures Animation has lined up, so what is going to be Sony Pictures Animation's future? What is it going to look like? Well, let me be very honest with you guys. Yeah, good luck trying to survive 2017, because there is a very big chance that we are going to see the end of Sony Pictures Animation. This could be the final films that they'll be releasing. And the reason for that is because of 2017. Look at all the projects that they have released. You got Surf's Up 2. You got 3 animated features, which is a really big risk and unheard of from any other animation studio other than DreamWorks. And they have 2 brand new TV shows. So you got Smurfs The Lost Village and The Star, and you got Emoji Movie, Express Yourself, and then you got the Cloudy series and Hotel Transylvania series. All 3 of these movies have a very large risk of being a failure. One is guaranteed as a fact that's going to be a failure, and it's going to have one of the worst reputations. It's already one of the most hated movies, but it could be one of the worst animated features of all time with Emoji Movie. There is no way that that one is going to be a hit. But with Smurfs and The Lost and The Star, those ones, yeah, they could end up being financial flops as well, considering that they have massive competition the week after. So they really have to try to profit the most that they can in their first week. Otherwise, they're pretty much in trouble. And if they don't come out, like, even in terms of its quality, if at least the Smurfs, if it doesn't come out as a fantastic movie, like higher than 90% on Rotten Tomatoes and stuff like that, it's not going to bring in a lot of interest. People might not even want to watch it. And, like, you know, audiences are not going to be fooled a third time after they fool audiences with 2 terrible Smurf films. So chances are Smurfs might actually lose money, and The Star has a very high chance that it's going to be a failure, considering that it's aimed for a very limited market and the fact that it's going to be released before Star Wars Episode 8. That is a really large factor. The only things that they might find some profit a little bit, like other than maybe the Smurfs, is the series that they got. And honestly, I don't see any interest. I don't see anybody who is interested to see the Hotel Transylvania series or the Cloudy series. Like, that might even be canceled by season 1, and that might fail right there. And even when you look in 2018, even though that those movies look like they're going to be the most profitable, like, imagine if the Ghostbusters reboot that's coming out in a few weeks is going to flop at the box office. What are they going to do with Ecto Force? Are they going to cancel it? Are they going to continue with it? What's going to happen to that? And that's probably a massive problem, because if the Ghostbusters reboot ends up being one of the most hated movies of the year, then they can't really go into more Ghostbusters projects. Like, Sony has to pretty much stop it. And even when you look into Hotel Transylvania 3, I'm seriously doubting if it's going to make the same numbers as Hotel Transylvania 2, because for the first time ever, it's going to have some direct competition. Hotel Transylvania 3 is going to be released at the same time as the Scooby-Doo movie. You know, Warner Animation's group, Scoob, you know, the first movie in the Hanna-Barbera lineup. If Scoob actually turns out to be a really, really good movie, then chances are it's really going to lose a lot of interest for Hotel Transylvania 3. There's a very strong chance that I can even say legitimately that Scoob is really going to hurt Hotel Transylvania, because for the first time ever, now audiences have options to go see some Halloween-based movies, because that's one of the biggest things that Hotel Transylvania managed to profit from, is the fact that it was the only kids movie released. But now when Scoob is up in the competition, and it might be a massive threat to Hotel Transylvania 3, if it turns out to be great, then it might discourage Sony from making any more stuff with Hotel Transylvania. And then finally you got the Spider-Man movie, which it's probably the one that's most likely going to be a massive hit, but they have to go through all this crap. They got to go through the entirety of 2017 and the entirety of 2018 to the point that when Spider-Man will be released, it's going to be too little too late. You know, like, Sony might have already lost so much money, and they can no longer afford to run an entire animation division, so they have to let it go. So, yeah, basically what we're seeing here could be the final years of Sony Pictures Animation. And, especially nowadays, when you think of other studios right now, when you think of, like, DreamWorks, Disney, Pixar, Illumination Entertainment, you know, the actual, like, best animation studios that are currently running, in terms of the major animation studios, like, they've already got a release date for movies like, you know, for movies for 2019 and 2020. And even, like, I think even Warner Animation Group has already got some, you know, they got some movies lined up for after 2018. But with Sony, let's be honest, like, they're in their last legs. And considering how all their movies, they don't look like they're appealing, they better shut down. Like, honestly, they might have no other choice but shut down their entire division. Let's face facts. Sony doesn't know animation. And with that said, that is all that I've got for this week. So thank you guys so much for listening to this episode of the Animation Podcast. You can find more of my work at film-book.com. Just search for Matt Chipkinet or the Animation Podcast. You can also find me on Twitter at Animat505. If you listen to this podcast on iTunes or any other podcast service, do you mind doing us a little favor and rate and review this episode? That would be great. And if you are listening to this podcast on YouTube, then hit that like button on our video and leave us a little comment on your thoughts on the news this week. Tune in next week for the latest episode of the Animation Podcast and all things animation. Thank you guys so much for listening, and until next week, see you later, dudes!